Send in the clowns. Those daffy, laffy clowns. Send in those soulful and doleful schmaltz by the bowlful clowns. Send in the clowns.
They're already here.
Get him, champ.
Actually, I was to put this on. It's just the intro. I just want you to hear Vince. Because I'm going to ask you if you could redo Vince's. Because I found an instrumental version.
An instrumental?
Yeah, never mind. Just watch the intro. It's like three lines. And I want you to do it.
Caesar's Palace! Nevada! Site of WrestleMania 9! Here is your host, Gorilla Monsoon!
I love that Gorilla fella.
Just give it your Vince impression, because your Vince impression is great.
It's tough. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's what it's like being Jay.
Yeah. That's what it's the.
Do you want to do like halfway through the show or something when your voice is warmed up?
Hello,
hello, and welcome to OSW.
Oh, yeah.
the Old School Wrestling Video Podcast, filmed in glorious Grapplevision and encoded with blast processing. We're done chronologically critiquing. We are reviewing wrestling pay-per-views and storylines
of the Mania.
Yes.
Edition 9.
Joined as always, my compatriots, Mr. OC.
Hello!
And V1.
Hello!
And Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hello!
It's a special bonus episode of OSW Review. It's WrestleMania 9, and it's coming up right now. Welcome, Noggers! Happy days are here again!
I don't know the words of the song.
No, you say the line. Just eat the 1,000 pies.
Okay.
Welcome, Noggers! Happy days are here again!
I still don't remember the line. Something about 1,000 pies.
Yeah, that'll
do. What's going on, lads? How's it going?
Yeah, pretty good.
Good.
By the way, OC, you caught a bit of heat for one of your comments in the last show where you said, "I don't care about ring psychology."
Did I say that, did I?
You sure did.
Or maybe you didn't say it and Jay edited in there.
Interesting.
I do sound just like you. Yes. As a special thank you, at the end of the last show, we sent out the call to our fans to choose our next episode. And a massive 63.5% voted for Mania 9. Runners-up were ECW One Night Stand 2005, and then WCW's Ready to Rumble, starring David Arquette.
I saw one person comment that he was really sad that we're not doing Man.
Oh, so are we, do Man all the time.
So, for our first episode out of the Hulkamania, and we're dragged back kicking and screaming to Hulk Hogan in the New Generation era. So when we burst your eardrums hurling abuse, remember, you asked for this. It's April 1993, and WWE, the fucking state of it. What happened? As mentioned in the last two episodes, there was a mass exodus of stars. Most recently, Flair and Bulldog are in WCW. Earthquake's fucked off to Japan in the most awesomely named federation. War, Wrestle and Romance.
It's amazing, isn't it?
And Tugger's running out the clock. And Owen's still out with a knee injury. And Vince McMahon thought Macho Man was too old to draw, despite stealing the show halfway through the pay-per-view and the last two WrestleManias, and has moved him to the commentary team.
Well, maybe Macho had his thing with Stephanie.
No, that would have been in 94. He would have been out the door.
94, brah.
Really fast after.
Making girls cry, brah.
In the corner, brah. Head down, brah.
Just a tip, brah.
WWF was able to secure a weekly live show on USA Network starting January 11th, 1993, called
Romance and Wrestling.
Raw! Very good. WWF Monday Night Raw, which broke new grounds. Instead of pre-taped footage from large arenas, joined together by announcers and commentators, WWF produced a one-hour live show in the tiny Grand Ballroom in Manhattan, New York. Vince promoted it as uncut, uncensored, and uncooked. It's Raw.
Yeah.
It felt much seedier with the smaller audience, the Raw girls, which were girls in swimsuits that held up signs, smaller stars, reams of gimmick jobbers, and announcer-comedian Rob Bartlett, comedian in inverted commas. Almost 3 months later, WrestleMania 9 rolled around. So let's get the pay-per-view underway. Monsoon welcomes us to the largest toga party in the world. It's WrestleMania 9, April 4th, 1993, from Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada. Caesar's Palace, it was a makeshift stadium.
Yeah, it's outside Caesar's Palace.
It's in the fucking parking lot.
It's in the parking lot, yeah.
It actually is. It was in a parking lot.
Oh, God.
They reconstructed it right beside it in the parking lot, next to the hotel and casino of the same name. Why did they do this? Because the Caesars Palace Casino paid WWE six figures to hold Mania there. And also, you could charge extortionate amounts in Vegas. You know, squeeze those tourists for every penny. And yes, so in front of 15,045 plebs and just over 1,000 comps, the average ticket price was a whopping $78.57.
Holy shit, yeah.
Yeah. So compared to Mania 8, that's roughly one third of the paying audience in attendance. And three times the ticket price.
It kind of looked like something, you know, it's this combat zone wrestling, you know, they have it in fields, you know. Kind of looked like that in a way. But I would have actually loved to have been there because it was quite intimate and every seat would have had a great view.
As always, I'm watching the Coliseum home video version, which is 3 hours 15 minutes total, 32 minutes longer than the Steve's anthology versions, which is 2 hours 43, because it includes the half hour pre-show. Jesus, the image and colour saturation is on the Colosseum, the Silver Vision version, is miles away from the anthology. Holy shit, it's like photographed from the 1700s, fucking Battle of Wounded Knee over here. Oh yeah, very sad. Today, the day we're recording, today 2 p.m, silvervision.co.uk, it's closed.
Ah, no way.
Yeah, they're going to WWE, have a new distributor. To live on in these episodes with my logo that I always flash up on it. Did you know that they're not the originals? They're lower quality because they're backups, because the manager for Silver Vision taped over the originals. That's why it looks like shit. Fucking
no
dirty.
Fucking way.
Like, this guy is the CEO of a tape company, right? This man should know that if you don't want to tape shit over, you just take out the little block thing. The little that's it.
Yeah, but then you put cell tape over it and you can tape
or
over.
Or if you're desperate, plaster also works.
Jesus. This is like HUD.
Bad your voice, yeah.
So you have plasters, but you don't have cell tape.
Yeah. No, like,
you just
don't
take it off one of your bullet wounds. Announcers tonight are Justin from WCW, Jim Ross. He hated working with Eric Bischoff, so when Eazy-E got into power as WCW's executive producer, Ross was immediately taken off TV. JR had the option to either sit at home or take a buyout and work elsewhere for much less. And I present to you, much less.
That's a good workout.
There's not many people in wrestling that have ever done that. Like, DDP took the cut.
Yeah, Goldberg gets go for it.
Goldberg.
Like, Rey Mysterio waited out his contract and no one gives him crap over it.
Really?
Yeah, that's why he didn't appear till 2002. JR laughs off being in a toga and he bitterly recounts the slight during his short-lived heel turn in 96.
The very first thing JR was booked to do in WWF was make fun of himself. There's a lot more to go.
His voice is so much higher.
Crazy.
It's not the JR voice.
Yours truly from the great state of Oklahoma has ever been in a toga myself.
They waste an astonishing 8 minutes before the first wrestler comes out by introducing Caesar and Cleopatra, who come out on an elephant. Tim Travers comments, "It's a shame Flair wasn't around to fulfill his Spartacus gimmick."
Oh, it would have been so good.
Macho comes out with Vestal Virgins on a Sudan.
He's wearing a glorious getup. It's amazing.
Is it too early for...
No,
I have many rounds in this show.
So, Steve! what bar is he?
Macho Man, this show, is wearing an amazing like purple, white and gold getup. So the first one, a packet of eclairs.
Yes.
White writing, yes. Purple background and gold trim around the writing.
Okay.
And the last one, he's a packet of Cadbury Wishes. Gold with purple and white.
Oh, and Heenan rides out backwards on a camel.
When he kind of fell on all fours, Macho Man goes behind him and lifts up his toga, and he's wearing big blue granties, like, and points at him, and he's like, hey. That's it.
He did say that he was terrified of camels and hated doing the spot. Randy Savage immediately spouts absolute shit on the microphone.
Oh, I quickly turned off the Macho Man. He was so bad on this show.
Same with me, I just didn't listen to him.
WrestleMania 9! Go for it! Lock and load! Do the thing! If you got the guts! Oh yeah!
I suppose Vince could have been in his ears. Oh, do the thing, do the thing!
Do the thing! Caesar's Palace! Caesar's Parking Lot!
See. Do you want to give us a macho impression?
WrestleMania 9! Shawn Michaels! I know why he's here. Fantastic. High risk maneuver, and he went for it. No doubt it's WrestleMania 9.
Throw to Finkus Maximus to introduce the contestants of our inaugural contest of the night. No, it's not Tito Santana pinning Papa Shango in 8 minutes. That was a dark match.
I still want to see Papa Shango. I haven't seen him yet.
Well, this one wasn't on any tape, so, you know.
It's probably because your man taped over it, wasn't it?
So, for the third WrestleMania in a row, the Intercontinental Champion Shawn Michaels opens the show. And for the second WrestleMania in a row, Marty got himself fired before they could do Shawn Michaels versus Marty Jannetty.
He's fucking amazing.
The guy without a job.
At all. He's like, not like, I'm getting sacked.
Creeping up on Shawn from behind is Luna Vachon. Seems to be a surprise to everyone, it's her WWF debut. Shawn hated the pairing, so he didn't pay her any attention until they split.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. Different.
Yeah, Luna Vachon, I thought, amazing gimmick. She's basically a classic horror film caricature, like, and she's got these wonderful pantomime facials and scowls and growls. And
I thought she looked cool and she got a cool gimmick, but made no sense for her to be with Shawn Michaels, because why would, like, the Heartbreak Kid, the sexy boy, go with this beastly, ghastly thing? Like, one of the commentators tried to say that she's a former Miss Ontario. Bollocks. It was her auntie that was Miss Ontario or something. Yeah.
But not her.
No.
That's like going to get legal advice from, like, a lawyer's brother. No. His opponent is Tatanka Buffalo. The Lakotan Warrior, having pinned him twice in non-title bouts on Superstars and on Raw. As expanded in the last episode, Marty was fired before Sherry could manage him, so she latched onto the American War Eagle instead. She's looking well old here.
Yeah, she's looking old. However, she has ginormal tits.
Yeah, she spends the match threatening to throw handbags at Luna. Tatanka opens up, he counters a bulldog into a back body drop, a top rope arm drag, and Shawn does the flare turnbuckle spot and chopped out onto the floor. Man, this is what Shawn Michaels brings to the table. Entertaining sequences and bumping like a boss for the very boring Tatanka, who constantly relies on chops. He's like, always just goes back to the chop. Just, that's all I do, is I chop. I'm a war eagle, I'm a Native American, I chop. That's what I do. We chop, don't we?
I think you're doing him an injustice here, Jay. I actually thought he was okay.
Chop.
Shut my mouth.
Yeah, he is not a patch on Martel, as we saw at SummerSlam 92. The commentators mention Shawn's been hurt. Has he re-injured his shoulder? Which is a babyface-like thing to say to defend your title anyway. Surprised there was no mention of Macho's history with Sherry. Shawn counters a top rope tomahawk chop. with a crescent kick before it was christened the super kick, so it's not a finisher yet. Mm-hmm. I felt this match drags and drags. The two do nothing until Tatanka hulks up and runs wild with chops and a cross body.
Why didn't you just hulk up at the start of the match?
Maybe you have to get beat down for a few minutes to build up your Hulk meter.
The Hulk meter, that's the one, yeah.
His running wild is very slow and poor. Like, it's supposed to be a flurry of offense. This is the big spot that you've been building to since the start of the match, and it's like one chop every, 10 seconds.
Chop. I've actually got it written down here. I really hope Jay Aruk comes up with a clever native pun on Hulk's up, because I could come up with one.
I did think about it, and I didn't.
I just total blank.
And I don't do puns.
Did you see Sean's absolutely awful attempt at doing the Kishi bump, the spin from a clothesline? Mm-hmm. It was so bad.
Shockingly, Bull Buffalo sends HBK into the ring post and schoolboys Sean, but doesn't get the three. A couple more near falls and they brawl outside. WWF splice in Sherry chants, and before Sean can be counted out, he pulls referee Joey Morella out. Bastard ref waits until Tatanka hits the Samoan drop, so instead of counting the fall, he just calls for the bell. We must have a winner. A DQ win for Tatanka, and the crowd cheer, surprisingly.
Yeah.
What I did appreciate, the way idiot wrestlers, they win by DQ but don't win the title, and they kind of celebrate for a couple of seconds and then, oh, I didn't win the title. You know, he's kind of a bit disappointed and appreciated that.
He should be. You should count. If you are in a title match and you don't win the title, that's a loss for you.
Absolutely. He absolutely played up to that. But Sherry was still clapping away like an idiot.
Oh, man. So this took 18 minutes, 33 seconds. Holy shit. Little did I know that was just contender for match of the night. I thought it was very purpose-built match. Like, both men get on the card, neither man do the job, Sean keeps his belt, and Tatanka keeps his undefeated streak, and they forward the feud between Sherry and Luna. Incidentally, Bam Bam versus Kamala was scheduled for the pay-per-view, but was cut due to time constraints. Post-match, Luna Pearl Harbors Sherry, and Tatanka attends to her, and we get a shot of far too much of his cheek.
But that's what this match was. It was literally just a backdrop to set up the Luna and Sherry feud.
Of course, that match never takes place. As it just ends up being a vehicle for her main squeeze, Bam Bam Bigelow, to return, and Tatanka to make the save, and those lads can feud.
I thought the match was too long, but I thought it was pretty decent. Definitely got the impression that Sean was dragging Tatanka through the match, but I don't think it was that bad.
I actually have it here. Good match. Excellent start. Very boring middle. Stupid fucking finish. But yeah, it was good. It was good.
The problem with an undefeated streak gimmick to someone who shouldn't go around with an undefeated streak, who kind of sucks like Crimson.
It's the first thing I thought of.
Is that you end up just doing screwy finishes, and that doesn't help him at all. Mm. And it just breeds contempt, so he shouldn't do it. But Tatanka is still well over.
Yep.
In April 93.
Yep. Let me tell you something. The Steiner Brothers is going to be their biggest challenge. The head shrinkers are unbelievable.
Alright, so next up we got the Steiner Brothers versus the Head Shrinkers. In front of a lovely Roman backstage set and Caesar bust, Mean Gene interviews the Steiner Brothers. A generic babyface promo. They say it's their first WrestleMania. They're going to do what they do best, wrestle, and make Julius Caesar proud. It's not so weird to see the pre-genetic freak metamorphosis Scott Steiner.
Dave Meltzer again. He's the big, stupid fucking hair leg.
The Steiners are in from WCW, debuting December 21st, 1992, and wrestling on the inaugural Monday Night Raw, defeating Bo and Blake Beverly at the Rumble in a Who's the Best Brother tag team match. Actually, that goes to Hogan, brother. Their next opponents en route to the WWF tag team titles, it's Vince's latest racist stereotype, the Head Shrinkers, Fatu and Samu. A classy name. The Samoan SWAT team had been going since 1985, including the NWA, WCW, and Puerto Rico. Managed by Samu's dad and Fatu's uncle, Afa, formerly of the Wild Samoans, who is a savage who'd scarf down large pieces of fried chicken at ringside. Of course, Fatu, that little boy that nobody liked, grew up to be...
The big Quiche.
Yes, Rikishi Fatu.
Can I ask, like Fatu obviously put on, what, twice his body weight? I mean, do you think that was intentional for his career? Because it kind of seemed to happen very quickly.
I get the feeling that it was actually Vince said, I have a gimmick, but it's for a big fat Samoan bloke.
Although, it does happen to... Don't want to be like all of them. Like,
well, they do have raging diabetes, don't they? But it's like Indians. They've got both like lifestyle and genetic predisposition.
But you know, it just seems like once they hit kind of mid-20s, it's just everything seems to go. Look at the Usos in the last year; they've put on a good bit of weight. And well, do you remember Manu? Yes. Man, you! How shite was it?
Straight off the bat, Quiche does his trademark inside-out bump from a Styler line. Much better during the Attitude Era. I thought it was kind of lame that WWE are doing this whole Roman Colosseum gimmick, but the lads are in their everyday wrestling gear.
Yeah.
Man, these singlets, the fucking hell. You can't take them seriously. Like, these lads are awesome fucking wrestlers.
That's good. They're wrestlers.
playing up your college football background. Very WCW.
Yep.
Nice twin top rope clotheslines from the same turnbuckle from the Steiners.
Steiner lines. Makes you sound like a fucking idiot. Frankensteiner makes sense. Steiner line makes no sense.
As opposed to a clothesline.
Yeah, but it makes no sense.
So what does a clothesline mean?
Well,
it's where you hang your clothes.
You actually, like, get the line and to you hold it and then run towards the bloke. Like. The Savages regroup on the outside by banging their hard heads together.
Yeah, this is taking it one step further, isn't it? Then you hit me in the head, I'm not going to feel pain too. We're both going to hit each other in the head.
And then that gives us, like, a boost. Like.
Yeah.
After Scott delivers a double underhook powerbomb, Samu returns with a botched hangman, dangerously dumping Scott Steiner to the outside.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, I thought he was dead.
Yeah.
After JR backs up Macho on seeing the Samoans cheating, Heenan quips, but you're from Oklahoma. And he's like, what does that have to do with it? It means you know nothing. That's his line of night, I think. Yeah. Scott gets slowly worked over. Samu missing a flying headbutt allows Rick to get the hot tag, but the heels quickly take back control. JR brings up the referee losing control for a bit. Oh look, it's Fonzie, you know, RVD's future manager, the dickhead with the whistle.
It was so annoying, even just as a referee, he's like, he's so over the top and fake about it. But thank God he doesn't have his whistle.
Awesome looking. The Samoans look to do a kind of doomsday device, but Rick twists his hips, reversing it into a power slam. It's like, holy shit!
That's one of the best spots we've seen in our 30 episodes. Fucking awesome. No replays, of course, because there's no such thing as replays back then, for God knows what reason.
It should have been the finish, but it wasn't. The finish comes a few minutes later. Finish comes up right now instead. Scott bails in for a bimmy to Jimmy and a really fucking poor botched Frankensteiner and gets the 3 and the win at 14-21. He then asks to see a replay, but JR bats it away, presumably because he botched it.
It's still awesome for a guy that size to be able to do that. Standing Frankensteiner.
But you botched the move, so, you know, it's like, would you do a regular move well? Or is it better to try something difficult and fail?
But he didn't think he'd fail. You know, he goes,
I am going to fail.
Yeah. Like, it's not like Sin Bocci who knows he's going to fail.
Yes, a few years later, the Frankensteiner would be dropped completely from Scott's arsenal after he almost killed Scott Norton with it, which would be replaced by a shitty but much safer standing camel clutch called...
The Steiner Recliner.
But he did still break out the like top rope Frankenstein.
That was once against Kurt Angle.
Jesus
Christ!
Wasn't
that where Angle did a top rope sunset flip and Steiner like held onto
the ropes? He held onto the ropes!
Until he didn't take a fall.
Fucking Spider-Man.
But didn't he start doing a brain buster then as well?
I won't trust him. I won't buster it. Away.
It's okay,
no
Steve.
Way.
It's just a Steiner buster. The Steiners themselves would be done with WWF by mid-94 and head to ECW en route to WCW, back home. Anything before I move on?
No.
No, the match was alright.
Contender for match of the night.
It actually is the second best match of the night.
Backstage, the Coliseum home video cameras are rolling in the doctor's office as Sherry hilariously sells her few kicks in the tummy by convulsing. It was awesome. Luna Vachon hearkens her arrival like Snarf with snarls and beats up Sherry before being taken away by the Popo.
Well, if you get beat up, the best place is the first aid room because they can attend to you quickly.
You don't have to go far. That's clever.
It's Cleaver, Heenan.
We're back with Doink, ladies and gentlemen, here on Monday Night Raw, and Doink likes to make children cry, not laugh, and Crush has warned you about that.
He warned me about what?
Making children cry.
Oh, ooh, right to the pole.
Love it, Crush. Keep it up, baby. Do the thing.
Backstage is...
Doink, bro.
Mean Gene gets over how he's been...
Making kids cry, bro.
Doink, bro. Was a heel clown who amused himself by making practical and verbal jokes at the fans and wrestlers' expense, such as squirting people in the face with water, pie-facing them, tripping the boss man up with a tripwire, then blinding him, and dumping water on Marty Jannetty. When he squirted Crush in the face with water, and Pearl Harbored him and KO'd him with a fake arm, he couldn't stand for that, bra. As it turns out, Crush was KO'd because the arm was filled with batteries. Oddly enough, Doink was also a technically sound wrestler, his finishers being the whoopee cushion, the seated senton, and the stump puller, which was previously used by Big Bully Busick. He's played here by... He's played here by Matt Bourne, who made his pay-per-view debut at...
WrestleMania 1.
Yes, Episode 1, wrestling as himself, the son of Tough Tony Bourne. He'd been
that was a gimmick that was going to get you over, wasn't it? Fucking hell.
He'd been into the USWA and WCW as Big Josh since then.
He's not that big.
No, he's very average, isn't he? Yeah.
Average Josh. Crush is out first.
Bar.
Which one?
Crush.
Steve, bro! You're making... colored bars, bro? What bar is he?
He is a packet of Skips.
Yeah, well done, man.
Yeah.
Doink, bro?
There is no bar for the amount of colors Doink is. It's just, you know, unless you want... He could be a fruit pastel as ice pop.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Very nice. Christ, his music... Doink's music.
It's amazing. It's
terrifying.
Yeah.
It made It shit as pants.
It's great, isn't it? Oh, God. I just, like, I'm actually reading It at the minute, and... just imagine fucking Pennywise coming towards you. He's the most terrifying thing ever. Thank God I'm 29. I'm not a child.
I thought that they could have done so much more with this character. I didn't think he was dark enough. Just go full Pennywise.
I agree, yeah. Heenan quips.
Crush is mad. You got that Hawaiian temper boiling.
Aren't they known for not having a temper?
Yeah.
For being like really easygoing people and ukuleles and whatnot.
And the Luma, Luma. And Crush has a sunset with seagulls as his tramp stamp. It's a Hawaiian temper. That's like, oh, he's got that Irish sobriety. Crush batters Doink, brah, for a while, brah, until Gabe Newell in the crowd gives us a thumbs up.
Nice. Kona Crush, if you were listening to Macho Man, all his moves are called
That's Vince.
He's hitting the shock of bra.
Doink Bra takes control with a stunner, using the top rope, so a stun gun maybe, and delivers a pile driver, landing Crush right on his pineapple.
For the third time in three matches, they do a spot where someone jumps off the ropes, catch, turn it into a power slam.
Mm.
Damn you, D-Lo.
Crush regains control until they're ready to go home. The evil clown sticks his head under the ring apron to tell his mate, get ready for the finish. Crush applies the head squeeze, and Doink flails around and KOs the ref, who sails like death. Another Kona clutch, and a second Doink.
Doink bra bra!
The second Doink smashes the prosthetic arm over Crush, enabling original Doink to get the win at 8:24. They do the amazing mirror spot, the am I seeing double?
They're completely out of sync. Like, one's lifting up this arm, the other's lifting up that arm.
Yes, this am I seeing double spot. I'd asked for this for the two Hebners to do this spot back in episode 7, Rumble 88 review. Hilariously, Heenan contends that the second Doink was just an illusion.
Heenan, you're a figment of your own imagination.
I love this ending.
Yeah.
The match was shit, but it made up for it at the end.
Completely agree. Doink number two here was played by Steve Kern, better known as...
Skinner!
I have to clean my pool and get my skimmer. Fonzie tries to explain what happened with the original ref, but with no other Doink to be found, the decision stands, brah.
Where did the other Doink go?
Home, brah.
Well, obviously he went home.
Or are they trying to kayfabe us into, like, he wasn't real? You know, like, is that what the plot line is?
No, the heels are going to keep up that pretense, but it's obvious to you watching it.
Oh, man, fucking... Two Doink Bras? Doink Bra Bra?
So, well, there must have been a trapdoor.
Yeah.
But they're in the car park.
They probably cut the gene and he just got up and left.
Oh, that's completely smashing.
All the fat. Doink Bra Bra!
Matt Bourne had some hilarious false claims about Mania 9, that he was supposed to work a feud with Hogan until he nixed it, and having to change the original finish because Dave Meltzer found out what it was, which is he'd activate a device around his wrist which would trigger tubes hidden inside a false compartment attached to his head, then explode.
Where would this compartment be? People would see it if it was attached to his head.
Just like a big blender. Multicolored matter would then explode 10 feet out in different directions from the top of Doink's head.
Matter?
Yes.
Okay.
Thus blinding Crush and costing him the match.
Why could he not just use the fucking flower? Yeah. Like, that's the most convoluted shite I've ever heard in my life.
There was a funny incident at the TV taping afterwards. Backstage, Matt Bourne's wife flipped out when he saw her husband flirting with another woman. But it turned out it was Steve Kern dressed as Doink.
He doesn't look like a woman.
No, Steve Kern.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go.
Doink Bra's wife saw Doink Bra Bra. Oh, and got angry.
I love you, Bra. I love you, Bra.
It's our first appearance of Todd Pettengill. I like this guy. I really, really like this guy.
Todd Pettengill's in the Bob Uecker cheap seats. Fuck you, there are no cheap seats at WrestleMania 9. Where he asked two Japanese stereotypes, photographers, obviously, big cameras, about if there were two Doinks. And they give their typical tourist outburst response, which was...
Were there two Doinks? Sir, were there two Doinks? Alright, how are you enjoying your stay here in the U.S.?
Las Vegas number one. Caesar's Palace number one.
Hey, Yokozuna.
Yokozuna number one.
Unbelievable. Two Doinks or an illusion. We'll leave it up to you.
That's really offensive. Like, it's just, I guess, you know, you gotta take, the wrestling is built on stereotypes, but it's weird to see it just slammed in your face.
It would be like, say, if we went over to Africa, say, and we were doing an interview.
Careful now.
Yeah.
This is
No, keep going with
and,
this.
And we were doing an interview. and we couldn't speak their language. So every time they'd say something like potatoes. Yeah, we go, oh, potato, very good. Or breakfast roll. Callback.
Yeah,
call back.
That's like 10 episodes ago.
Nice.
What's happening right here is that everybody's psyched to the max for WrestleMania 9. And you got to do more than just what it would be to win a match under normal circumstances.
That. Next up, it's Razor Ramon versus fucking Nothing. Fucking duck arse himself, Bob Backlund, with his amateur wrestling stance and hop. Backlund, he's been out of the WWE.
He did have an America jacket. You should appreciate that.
Mm.
No. Gonna no-sell the shit out of that statement.
He is dressed as a Rome bar. Backlund had been out of a WWF ring since 1984, prior to the first WrestleMania. Vince brought him back because he's about as clean living and steroid free as you can get, and thought it would be good for the company's image and hopefully draw some older fans from a decade ago in the Northeast. The booking does not correspond to that. Scott Hall debuted before the 1992 Survivor Series, helping Ric Flair regain the WWF Championship. The Razor gimmick was heavily borrowed from Tony Montana in Scarface, a greasy Cuban with a violent, shady past, right down to calling himself the bad guy. He loves movies, and he also suggested that Sting take the Crow gimmick from Brandon Lee's movie of the same name.
Really?
Wow. Smart guy.
So I thought an amazing contrast between the two. Razor, a highly gimmicked heel, tanned, whose strength is promos, looks like a million bucks.
He looks awesome.
Versus the smaller, pasty, bland, stupid haircut, straight baby face, no character, bigeared Backlund.
You like him then, yeah?
Whose strength is cardio and basic mat wrestling. I thought it was a complete anachronism. He looks straight out of the 70s in WCW. What are you doing in the neon 90s of the new generation?
And not only that, I mean, he was champion for donkey's years, wasn't he?
Like 4.5 years or something, yeah.
Yeah, donkey's ears as well.
Yeah. They barely fucking mention it. Former champion Bob Backlund. Mm. You know, I mean, at least give him some kind of credibility. The fact that Razor beating him means something, you know?
Yeah.
Scott Hall, he's a heel, by the way.
There was lots of bad booking this show. There were, you know, like, Sean is the heel and that, but he sold for most of the match and made no sense.
Extreme clash of styles. It didn't lead to, oh, wow, this is very interesting clash of styles.
It doesn't work.
Incompatible.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, like, Backlund, he's the pasty, generic, creative wrestler. So everyone just immediately gravitates to Scott Hall as well, because he's a cool character.
Just the only actual wrestling spot in the entire match, and he fucks it up. Backlund gives him 2 arm drags, which he takes kind of backwards. You know the way, like, Cena takes a Japanese arm drag wrong, and that's why he tore his pec a couple of years ago? Like, he just takes it arseways. Razor basically did the same thing, and then because he took it wrong, he was too far out for Backlund's dropkick, and then when he did it, he just missed him. Like, that was really, really bad. Like,
the match was short enough. Backlund thwarts Razor's offense with dodging and sticking out his arse, like Donald Duck, and succumbs to a small package at 3:45. The one thing Backlund has going for him, mat skills, and he's defeated cleanly with a basic wrestling maneuver. Oh, by the way, older fans, thanks for tuning in. That was Backlund's first TV pinfall loss ever in the WWE.
Oh, God.
If you'll recall, when he was champion, he was stripped of the WWF title back in 1984 due to an injury, and Hulk Hogan took his place versus The Sheik and beat him for his first WWF title.
Unbelievable.
Hmm. Interesting.
I've never seen that before.
I did actually mention it on episode 1.
Yeah.
I'll see you in Mania Night.
Standing room only bigot hanging from the rafters. If there were rafters, the Roman Colosseum doesn't have rafters. But I'll tell you what they have. They have columns in there hanging from the columns.
So next up, the WWF Tag Team Championship is on the line. It's Money Inc. versus the Mega Maniacs. As 1993 rolled around, Brutus Beefcake was about ready to return to action from his parasailing accident before SummerSlam 1990, episode 19. He offered an open challenge, which was taken up by DiBiase, whom with IRS battered Beaver, trying to re-injure his face. Jimmy Hart couldn't allow this level of evil and tried to stop it, getting thrown out for his troubles. IRS drilled the barber straight on the nose with his briefcase, busting him up.
It looked fucking great. It looked so good.
The next week, Dude Brother Jack Hogan made his return to the WWF on Raw and challenged Money Inc. to a match at WrestleMania 9 with his new old tag partner, Brutus Beefcake. Because they would have tagged in No Holds Barred steel cage match against Zeus and Macho.
That's right.
He now sported a protective titanium mask. He neoned it up himself. Its sharp design makes it look a bit like warrior face paint. So the next contest is actually your main event of the evening, as Hogan's return match, as soon as he returns, was promoted over the WWF Championship match, which, to be honest, was the right decision. Nobody cared about Hart and Yokozuna. And congratulations! Hulk's return garnered a whopping 410,000 pay-per-view buys.
Mm.
The poor Nasty Boys, they would have gotten this title shot if Hogan and Beefer didn't steal their spotlight.
So does this mean that Hogan came back and outmoaned them and, like, superseded them in the rankings?
What? I thought I got you a title shot! Yeah, who's complaining?
Me!
This time with Mean Gene, it's the WWF Tag Team Champions, the awesome-looking Money Incorporated, the Milky Bar Kid, Ted DiBiase, an IRS who's gotten a golden briefcase. Fan-fucking-tastic.
Which is the exact same briefcase that they use for Money in the Bank now. It's the exact same shape.
Yes, it's a Halliburton.
Ah.
DiBiase says the higher the stakes, the bigger the bankroll when you win. And IRS mentions Hogan was in an accident coming out of the gym the night prior. So it's Money Incorporated, Ted DiBiase, and IRS versus the Mega Maniacs, Bionic Brutus Beefcake, and Hulk Hogan for Money Inc.'s Tag Team Championship. It's odd that Hogan's returning for such a low-key match, isn't it? The tag titles?
Very strange.
Although tag titles mean more.
It's almost like he knew something was going to happen at the end.
But I remember even the build-up to this. I was like, oh, Hogan's back. Oh, what?
You know, Ed Leslie living the dream here. Yeah, getting the tag while his hero, you know? Of course, the faces come out to Hogan's music, entering amidst red and yellow smoke.
State of your fucking smoke, mate.
Post-wellness testing Hogan. He's back. He must have dropped, what, 70 pounds?
He is tiny. He's so small. Yeah, it's like, it's the most noticeable thing ever. Splicey, 87 and 93.
Because, like, when I think of WWF Hogan, there's him when he's working out and he's got the bells and he's going, rah! Monster. And, like, I think of this Hogan as, like, WCW Hogan.
Yeah.
Fucking clean as a whistle. Oh, so you get a look at Hogan's big, dirty black eye, his Irish kiss. It was from a jet ski accident. The legendary rumour of Macho cold-clocking him is not true, although it's hilarious. Beefer mimics Hogan's actions, like the U point, like a pitch. He's wearing such loud, it's like Hulk colours, but like louder. Odd to hear Macho on commentary being pro-Hogan, considering their like huge mega powers breakup, you know? Macho hated Hogan at this point. They were at each other's throats. But yeah, it was also weird seeing Macho and Warrior being all pally-pally last year at SummerSlam. The faces wrestle like a crowd-pleasing house show, sending the heels packing to the outside and doing lots of count-to-ten punching spots. And the crowd loved it.
Yeah.
They were mental for this match.
Yeah.
Money Inc. tried to leave, a la Mania 8 versus the Disasters, and
I hate that shit.
But the ref says he'll strip them of the belts if they don't re-enter the ring after a lightning quick 10 count. Anything, Steve?
Something about the rules, Steve?
No, the rules were all fine here. Well, I know they're changing the rules, yeah. I know.
Yeah, if you add impromptu stipulations to a match, that's bollocks.
Yeah,
you have to do.
True.
Where was that when he signed the contract for the match?
Teddy Long walks out and he's like, "Oh, I'm making this a tag match," and they're all like, "It already was."
Entertainment-wise, yes, a good idea, but bullshit rules-wise, Heenan speaks the truth, saying, "How can they do this? Do they just make the rules as they go?"
Yes.
The titanium mask allows Beefheart to have a hard head gimmick, so he no-sells a turnbuckle spot. Money Inc. gain control choking the Hulkster with the turnbuckle tag rope. That's something DiBiase's done before. It's an awesome heel spot. Usually the heels cheat behind the ref's back, you know, and the face partner would distract the ref by protesting. But it's reversed.
Protesting?
But it's reversed here as the barber gets the sleeper on DiBiase to break up Hogan's beatdown as IRS protests. Beaver hooks up with a high knee and a big atomic drop to the outside and punches until DiBiase quells it with a Halliburton briefcase shot. Million Dollar Man is able to remove Beaver's mask and the heels wail on Brutai's face. Beefer's hope spot is cut off as DiBiase causes a ref bump. Then Hogan gets the unseen hot tag and cleans house. When both pin the heels, Jimmy Hart tries to revive the ref. but instead hilariously turns his jacket inside out, which is striped a la a referee shirt.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Not ref shirts tonight, by the way, they're wearing the blue shirts. And accounts the double fall. An exasperated Heenan sarcastically ponders if WWF official will actually count this as a win. Finkus Maximus announces Money Inc. as the winners by DQ, which is unspecified. Presumably Beefer bumping into the ref caused the DQ. Mm-hmm. And the faces who didn't win the belts celebrate anyway.
When Jimmy Hart did the count, they were kind of like, yeah, and you know, they got the belts. This is what I was talking about earlier. Tatanka didn't fall for this shit. Hogan, the veteran, the ultimate veteran, thought he had won the titles.
Yeah.
Come on.
Fucking Mark.
I have a belt. It doesn't feel right. Jimmy throws the second ref out for not ruling in their favour.
Fucking Hogan just about to batter this second ref. How very face of you. Jeez.
This match is... It's so backwards. Weird. Like,
it's functional booking.
Right.
Where... You need to keep the belts on Money Inc. So they have to win the match or lose by DQ. And like,
it's so backwards. Weird. Like,
how about we do a finish with Jimmy Hart?
They beat Beefer. You know what I mean?
Because then they couldn't celebrate at the end. I suppose they could just.
It's another thing to give out about.
Throw out the ref and celebrate anyway. Whatever happens, I'm going to celebrate.
You'll all love it.
Nice guy Hogan does Beefer strutting and cutting. And I did like that.
For about 3 or 4 seconds. He got bored of that pretty quickly.
At least he did it.
Yeah.
You know?
18 minutes, 36 seconds for this match with Hogan and friends celebrating for a fucking ice age.
Ages.
Holy shit. It was like, this isn't the end of the show. They just keep going. His theme starts looping and shit.
The worst part is that you're sitting here watching it and you know, this is going to happen again. I fucking hate you, Hulk Hogan.
But that's a retrospective hatred.
Yes, of course, yeah. In a kayfabe... No, yeah.
In a kayfabe, you assume this is the end of the night.
Yeah.
And you'll put up with it because that's the end of you tonight. Like. Sourpuss Hogan opens IRS briefcase, which he finds a brick, some tax forms, and wads of money. Instead of throwing it out into the air, it would be great because it's quite windy, it would go out to all the fans, he hands out singles to the ringside fans. Beefer keeps most of his wad for himself. The sneaky cunt.
You know what I would have liked in the briefcase? If it was like a big 12-inch black rubber cock. I don't know, for some reason.
A big black bully cock. Steve, do you want to get in on that?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. I wouldn't have mind Hogan and Beaver having a run with the tag belts, but sure, you know, tag belts beneath the Hulkster. But yeah, Beaver, he would get shit canned straight after WrestleMania, and he'd show up in WCW next year alongside
Vincent? Hulk Hogan.
Yes, as Brother Brutai.
What a this man? Yes,
I want to do a career retrospective on Brutai at some point.
I've got one right here. Yeah. Steve! How about we run through Beefer's many, many, many gimmicks? God. He had a total of 18 gimmick names. Whoa. Ed Leslie, he was always Hogan's bitch. His first gimmick, Hogan was Terry Boulder, so he was Hulk Hogan's little brother, Ed Boulder. And then he changed his name to Eddie Golden and Dizzy Golden. Oh, Hogan, you're Hulk Hogan, so I'm Eddie Hogan and Dizzy Hogan. And then Hogan left to the WWF, so he was Brute Force.
Great name. That'd be a much better name for a tag team, though.
Yeah, love it. And then Baron Beefcake.
Baron Von Beefcake.
Joining the WWF in 1984, he got his first proper gimmick, the Vain Male Stripper.
Brutus Beefcake.
Then tagged with Greg Valentine as...
The Dream Team.
In 1987, he got his most famous gimmick, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, cutting his opponent's hair after knocking them out with his sleeper hold. And he rode that until his parasailing accident. He made a short WWF return, referred to informally as Furface. But it wasn't official. A masked heel with an Indian-style vest, but it was shelved quickly so he could fully heal up and be Hogan's mate as the barber once again. So when the Bionic Beefer was shit-canned right after WrestleMania 9, he sat out until Hogan got his WCW contract. He showed up by the Hulkster's side as Brother Brutai, Brutai being a nickname Gorilla coined in WWF, and they couldn't call him the Barber, so then he became...
The Butcher? The Stylist?
What else you got?
The Cutter.
They couldn't call him the Barber, so he was the Clip Master.
Oh, God.
Here it is! Yes, my God! Oh, my... It's Brother Brutai! Oh, my God! He has butchered a friendship! That man has butchered a friendship!
That's all! He's butchered! He's a backstabber!
Turning heel, Brutai became...
The Butcher.
That's very good. Forming the Three Faces of Fear with Kevin Sullivan and the former Earthquake. Oh, a question, actually. What is the most you could get from being Hulk's best mate if you were in the company with him?
Guaranteed money.
Okay, more than that.
Well, yeah, like job safety and things like that, but tag team title.
Higher.
Main event number one contender.
In?
Wrestling.
Ed Leslie fucking main evented Starrcade 94 in a world title match against Hulk Hogan.
Holy fuckballs.
Imagine that. That's what being his mate, Dizzy Hogan.
Dizzy Hogan.
Dizzy Hogan.
We're not done, brother. At this point, he's just amusing himself. Guaranteed contract, brother. When Three Faces of Fear booted him out, he lost his memory. He became an amnesiac. He became the man with no name.
Jesus Christ.
And then the man with no face.
As he was the man with no face, was his face showing?
No, he was just heel. He rejoined Sullivan's side in the Dungeon of Doom stable as
Zodiac.
Very good. Wearing black and white face paint and only saying
Zodiac.
Yes. He'd only go yes and no. He'd only,
really?
Yeah, he'd only answer it like that. Turning face and leaving the dungeon, he became the Booty Man.
That's the one.
Infatuated with his own ass, accompanied by his booty babe, Kimberly Page. His finisher was the high knee. High knee? Affiliating with Hogan, he was then renamed Big Brother Booty. Trying to turn heel, his initial attempts to join the NWO were thwarted, and he left WCW for almost 2 years. And he'd return as the almost unrecognisable...
The Disciple.
Very good. A biker bodyguard in Hogan's Hollywood NWO, who was eventually outed as Beefer by Piper. He'd be abducted and brainwashed by the Ultimate Warrior, becoming the second member of the One Warrior Nation. A feat almost as big as becoming the second member of the One Man Gang. Bischoff managed to wrangle away his WCW paychecks in 1999, bringing us to a total of 18 gimmick names.
Holy God.
Whew. So, did you enjoy that run?
That was amazing. No. None of it was amazing.
So, Beefers Gimmicks brings us to the halftime special. It's the ad break questionarium.
It's time for the ad break questionarium. Who will Mean Gene interview?
Hi, I'm Todd Pettengill. Join me every weekend for WWF Mania. It's wild. It's crazy. It's excessive excitement caused by acute hyperactivity. Each week, we'll bring you exclusive interviews and tons of great wrestling action. But most of all, it's just good, clean fun. So start your weekend with the outrageous WWF Mania. Saturday mornings at 10 Eastern on USA. Just, brush your teeth first.
So, all your education got you down? Well, step into it. Step into a Slim Jim. Tear into the spice, that fizzy, juicy taste.
What is the meaning of this?
Need a little excitement? Step into a Slim Jim.
Did you figure it out? If you answered Macho Man, you're wrong. The answer is... Brill, from No Holds Barred. Huzzah!
Out of my way,
Mr. Brill!
Is Hulk Hogan here?
What are you doing
here? Hulk Hogan! Where is he? Hulk! We had contractual arrangements, we had agreements, I was...
Wait a minute, you've lost it here. You're upset after seeing that movie.
All right, I'm trying to get... Movie? That's not a movie, that's a travesty. The movie is Zeus destroys Hulk, not Hulk destroys Zeus. We had arrangements, we had agreements. It was contractually agreed to that Zeus destroys Hulk. Now, where is he?
I don't know who you think you are, but money doesn't buy everything.
I'll tell you who I am. I am the man behind the entire movie, and it was pulled out from under me by Hulk Hogan and whoever's behind him.
All right, I thank you very much, Mr.
Well, I don't thank you, and I don't think anybody connected with this movie.
Listen, you're out of line here. Don't.
You're out of line, and I'm out of here.
For Gorilla Monsoon and the analyst, I'm Tony Schiavone. We'll see you next time on Wrestling Challenge.
And we're back. Todd Pettengill, he talks to singer Natalie Cole. She says, I can't believe they gave away real money. And then Caesar's Palace CEO Dan Ryker.
Oh, fucking shilling everything, just trying to sell shit, like... What a dickhead.
He's not just perfect, he's perfect.
Mean Gene fawns over a face, Mr. Perfect, and the two get over Luger's gimmick. His forearm is a deadly knockout weapon and is in love with his own image. A narcissist. Straight from the files of Botchamania, Perfect hilariously guffs the Lexorcist, the Lark... And Gene tries to cover up.
And tonight, the narcissist
Lex Luger.
I'm going to go do it right now. I've had it. I'm so excited. It's WrestleMania. Watch what happens.
By the way, don't go too far away. I want to go to the tables with you. Right now, let's get back to action at ringside. And once again, Finkus Maximus. Luger. Oh, yeah.
And it's so funny because this comes seconds after him talking about how he's perfect. And he never messes up.
Cut to Ray Rougeau in a spiffy, roguish getup. You guys got this?
Nope.
He was with WWF champion Bret Hart. He got cheap-shotted at a press conference by Lex Luger. Oh, it was really funny because the way they had it pictured, it was like looking up at Bret so you could see kind of behind them. And Luger was just like... Hur. And then an official comes over to him and said, oh, this is a cue. And he went... You'll never guess... Who gave him his cue?
Wurzel?
Fucking Wurzel!
Nice!
The heel turn! Orchestrating this whole thing!
I knew it all along! Yeah, he's out there too much. He's fucking learning.
Wurzel!
Hitman deems it a minor setback, but he'll be 100% and totally focused on Yokozuna by match time. Rougeau mentions Hogan went into Bret's locker room earlier today. Hart blankly says,
well, I just say Hulk Hogan came back and gave me a real inspirational pep talk, and
after talking to him, I'll be going into this match with a lot of confidence.
Looking back, the tremendous foreboding on this. The joy of the world drains.
This is just the downbeat. He's just beaten down. He's like,
brother's coming. Like,
we see a shot of dripping water and stagehands through the curtains. It's Narcissus!
Narcissus!
Lex Luger. He comes out with four large-breasted gold bikini-wearing women. And the crowd, obviously enough, cheer loudly. Luger, holy sh... He is absolutely jacked. The size of him. Maybe his injury precluded him from the 91-92 wellness testing?
He does have a wonder bod. Nobody's going to deny that.
No.
But he's not, like, he wouldn't be a patch and say Warrior in his prime or even Rick Rude in his prime.
I suppose 93 he stands out as, like, holy shit. But yeah, Warrior and Hogan with his...
And how awesome is the gimmick in general with the mirrors and the...
I think it's great. It really is a good gimmick. And because it's so early in the 90s, not one of the girls had fake tits. They all have lovely bottoms, don't they?
It's true. If you recall, Luger was supposed to be in the WBF, World Bodybuilding Federation, but was injured in a motorcycle accident. By the time he healed, the WBF was no more, so he was brought into the WWF instead. He needed a metal plate in his forearm, which WWF incorporated as a loaded weapon gimmick upon debuting, KOing jobbers left and right. Meanwhile, Perfect had split from Heenan and turned face at the prior Survivor Series and had sent his client Ric Flair packing after besting him in a Loser Leaves Town match on Raw just after the 93 Rumble. Heenan insisted that his new protege, Narcissus, was beyond perfection, which Hennig took as a slight, and that's enough / all you're getting to set up this match.
That's okay.
There's a great segment on Superstars where Lex Luger is just posing in front of his full-length dress mirror and Ray Rougeau is trying to get an interview, but he's just fixated by himself. They have a shot over Lex where you can see into the mirror and it's reflecting back to the massive TV screen they have. Perfect comes on the screen and he's, hey Lex, and they start cutting a promo, but Perfect has to do this. So obviously he's looking off into nothing, but it looks on the camera
like they're looking at each other.
Yeah, he's looking through the screen.
That's cool.
And that's how they cut the start of their promo. It's like,
that's cool.
Kevin Dunn, like, that's him.
Yeah.
Because he hates wrestling. All he's interested in is TV show. But he fucking, he makes the production values so amazing. But just, you get these arty little shots and, you know, like the roadie run as well.
Yeah.
It makes the wrestlers look so big time. And you know, he's to thank for, you know, like WrestleMania 7, 15,000 people. It looks like 25,000 people.
Yeah.
Because of the way he shoots the arena. So it's pretty awesome. So that's about enough time wasting, because on the show, it'll just be gawking at Luger's babes.
Pretty much.
I was worried that the women were standing right above pyro machines when they got in the ring, but they're actually little mirrors with pyro machines on the top.
Yeah, it was like Jarrett, you know, when he comes out and he throws his thing over the air and the little...
And it was really windy, so it's just the sparks are right into their face, so they used the mirror as a shield.
Perfect was walking out, he was walking past the girls. One of the girls gave him like a rub on his chest. I'm like, you totally banged her last night, mate. You're a good man.
But like, face Perfect is like, get off.
Girls.
That is so gay. Get my cootie shots. Kick off with some nice sequences. Hennig does all of the work as Luger stands there. It's like...
Yeah. What match are you watching?
Luger stands in the middle of the ring and then Perfect bumps around him.
It's, I don't have that written anywhere.
Actually, Steve, you should call this match.
Yeah, no, yeah, no, totally.
We actually got a request.
You've been waiting for Luger for so
this
long.
This is the only Luger match.
No, you go through it. I mean, I'll say my piece.
The crowd roar after a particularly nasty sounding chop by Perfect.
And Luke, oh,
Chop City!
Yes, indeed, Chop City!
Chop.
Chop. Hennig zeroes in on Luger's left knee, whilst Luger focuses in on Perfect's lower back. Hennig considers a tornado punch, but then remembers he's not Texas Tornado. they trade near falls, including the most vertical leap sunset flip from Hennig. He like jumps up and then forward.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Basically a 50-50 match where the momentum would constantly swing favour like every few moves.
It was weird. I was like, it didn't really make sense from a match because no one was getting heat on someone.
Following an almost RVD style top rope dropkick from Hennig, it's like a one-legged dropkick, it was weird, Luger counters a backslide, catching his foot under the rope and delivers one of his own, getting the sneaky three despite Perfect's feet being on the ropes. Why isn't a second ref coming to Perfect's aid, for fuck's sake? Does there need to be two narcissists? Brah.
Never mind a second ref. Why isn't the original ref like, nah, doesn't count? You know?
Post-match, Luger KOs Perfect immediately with his deadly forearm and poses over him. Why wouldn't Luger start off with that and job him out no problem?
I'll tell you why. Because he's proving to Perfect that he can go toe-to-toe with him.
That he's more than Perfect.
Yeah, and did he or did he not beat Perfect at his own game?
He won the match.
Where is this point going, Steve?
I'm intrigued. Therefore, who's better then? Answer me that.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to use his deadly forearm. That's why after the match he said, here, listen, have a bit of that, like. But
stitch that, Jimmy.
So I have no problem with it whatsoever. Did you like the match?
I thought it was okay. I didn't think it made any sense. There was no real tail and face. And I thought that towards the end, it fell off a cliff and turned into like a punch kick affair. I thought that the finish would have been great if his feet weren't in the ropes, but that just, it wrecked my head. Like, the referee is right fucking there, and he's like, no, I'm just going to count and ignore it because it's not part of the script, you know?
But it was pretty obvious in the match that he was carried and laid out by Kurt Hennig, but I really enjoyed this match. It was weird. It was a different kind of brawl, and it wasn't a wrestling match in that. Wrestling match involves long bouts of selling, and this one was just continuously back and forth, like they were just beating on each other's face. Like, yeah, between being unbeaten, KOing every opponent, pinning Perfect, and KOing Brett, WWF, yeah, fine job building up Luger. It's like all of roses right now, and he's still quite over.
I'm pleasantly surprised. I think I was expecting a barrage of insults, and I think both of you kind of, I see where they're going with this. And I have written here,
amazing!
Messy!
I think he literally drags Perfect to the best match of his career.
The fans are going to go fucking mental. You are trolling, obviously. The show's not even out, me brother.
After the replay, Hennig boop, jumps up and heads to the back to retrieve Luger, who was chatting with fellow heel Shawn Michaels. They brawl into some empty cardboard boxes as Shawn beats down Perfect.
That made no sense.
Nonsense. But it's like, yeah, nice segue into a new feud. There you go.
Yeah. And my coffee, bra.
My star bar, bra. Cut the Mean Gene, who beats on Doink's trailer, bra.
Oh, we don't have this.
He wants answers about the two Doinks. Asking if it's like the circus where 25 clowns get out of a car. Doink retorts, this ain't no circus, before shutting the door in Gene's face. Mean Gene starts giving out and he's postulating on what's going on here. And someone's like, get out of the way, please. And it's another Doink. And he muscles him out of the way and goes into the trailer. It's obvious
that's
that
there's so good.
Two Doinks, yeah. But they're playing it up as, what is it, magic? Illusions? Fucking 93. Oh, love it, yeah. Love it.
But The Undertaker never went off his feet. He stayed vertical.
That proves The Undertaker's not real. He's from down under.
So next up, we have The Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez. After quickly losing at SummerSlam and definitively losing at Survivor Series, Kamala's monster heel gimmick was toast. Manager Harvey Whippleman sought to find himself a new monster of the month, and that he did, with the apparently 8-foot-tall Giant Gonzalez. So much like how Kevin Nash's knees stopped him from pursuing a basketball career, the same befell Gonzalez. He was signed to Ted Turner's Atlanta Hawks team before his knees got knackered, and so he became a wrestler. Unfortunately, 27-year-old RG had the grace and skills of Giant Baba, proving it many times over in WCW, but given his size, Vince thought it was worth a try. So Bill is 8 foot tall, he's actually about 7'7", but it still makes him about a foot taller than Taker.
It's well impressive looking, yeah.
Alright, let's get down to it. Why is Giant Gonzalez dressed in a naked, hairy Yeti suit?
Man, that's like fucking... What is the meaning of life, isn't it?
Philosophers over the years.
The real reason, I'm sure, is because...
His body is shit.
Yeah. He's flabby and...
Yeah.
Like kayfabe-wise...
Did he watch WrestleMania 8 and be like, that warrior looks fucking awesome, this show.
Add a bit of hair.
I want a bit of pubes.
And what's his bum like? I mean...
Mostly arse crack, isn't it?
Oh, there is an arse crack.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't really notice the arse crack.
They had separate the cheeks.
It was only downy fluff. Relax.
I was going to say, like, Gonzalez is a bit of an Owen McLove. I have no willy.
Yeah, kayfabe wise, is he a man in a nude suit? Or is he actually a hairy, dickless monster?
I think this is the first time we don't have an answer. I don't think they could come up with a kayfabe reason for it, so they just ignore it.
Maybe he was a sex offender, so he had it... chopped off.
Yeah.
Maybe he, you know, I am the Metatron. He doesn't have a lad, like in Dogma. This guy is Argentinian, right?
Yes.
So let's just presume that he lives high up in the Andes, okay? Maybe he's meant to be the Yeti!
Like, so he's legitimately a monster from the...
Yeah.
He's Bigfoot now.
With no Mickey.
Now hold on, didn't he end up getting furry jocks for panties?
Like fucking costs, like?
Yeah. He
got an attachable dick?
No. He actually, I think.
A big.
Eventually.
Black. Bully cock.
Can you imagine?
I don't want to.
No one will wrestle him. No one will. Hairy shoulders and groin, big muscly, arse crack, horrendous. But to be fair, it was a step up from his WCW glittery pink vest and silver and black Mortal Kombat ninja outfit.
Nice.
He gingerly walks up the steps, his knees are knackered.
He's like lopsided to the left and he walks. I'm like, oh man, the guy must be already in bits. Like, although, way better than what Kali is today.
Yes, he gingerly walks up the steps as we get a wide shot, including a fan giving him the double bird. It's like, you panned to this shot. Not to be outdone by Hogan, the Undertaker enters amidst green smoke. But Hogan got two colours. Mm-hmm. Being charioted to the ring, a vulture, not a crow, by his side. That was really awesome.
It was awesome. Except for the Egyptian dude bras that came out with him. Stay there.
Do you mean their outfits?
Like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pretty sure Taker wouldn't, you know, be into that.
Socialize.
Fucking.
Shame that it wasn't nighttime in Las Vegas, because this entrance would look so much better at nighttime. And Undertaker in the bright daylight looks weird.
It's actually one of my biggest gripes about the show is that it never goes dark.
Yeah, it's like Papa Shango. He entered at the start of SummerSlam 92, so it's bright out. It's like...
Yeah.
The geek, isn't it?
It's just a bloke with his face painted at that point, isn't it? Yeah.
On the pre-show, Mooney refers to Taker as the advance man for the Grim Reaper. Mm-hmm. As expected, the two have a no-selling match, chipping away at each other. I thought it was cool to see someone who dwarfs Taker height-wise. He's over a head taller. Ugh, Gigante is so bad. My brain just kept zoning out. Like, it kept reverting to, like, a fugue state, so I couldn't watch it.
So the two of them go kind of face to face. Thing does, like, some stupid fucking arm pose, but as he does it, Taker has turned away and is going back to the corner to take off his jacket and his hat. So then Taker has to go back into the middle of the ring, and then he's got to do his pose spot all over again. He just looks like a fucking idiot. Like.
After an eternal reverse headlock, Gonzalez throws Taker into the steps. JR tries to sell those steps as solid steel, but it immediately turns over and we see it's thin and empty. Taker makes his comeback with some punches while Gonzalez sells like the monster mash zombie. He's like...
It was like Hawk from SummerSlam. Yeah,
but he sold not using his arms. He was like... Fucking hell. The managers get involved as Gonzalez retrieves Whippleman's cloth, which the commentators tell us, it's doused in chloroform. Obviously enough, this smothering is a DQ, but Fonzie waits for a bit and then calls the bell. 3-0 is a crock of shit DQ win. Another fucking bullshit finish. By the way, chloroform is a manager's move, or a bitch move. It's not for someone much taller and heavier than Taker, a fucking monster with his soaked rag. It's like...
And not to mention, I mean, the match was going back and forth. First sign of, I could be in a bit of trouble here. Give me the rag. You know, give it a chance, mate. You can get back into the fucking match. No hanging around here, like. And he did it, like, it wasn't like he wasn't going to be DQ'd.
I don't know.
What was he thinking?
Yeah. And it was, you know, another one of those WWE moments where, you know, the bell rings and they make you wait for 10 minutes to find out what actually happened as well.
It was before it was marketed as a streak, but with the building up of another monster heel, like, this match was the greatest threat to The Undertaker's streak. And he didn't really beat Gigante here. No. Anyway, Gigante terrorizes the refs afterwards as officials usher Taker out on a stretcher, including a toga-clad Wurzel, peasant ref Jack Doan, and no time for this toga shit, suit-wearing Pat Patterson. Pat Patterson, you're back. He got rehired. Oh, very good. The sex scandal. He got fired.
That's
a
sex scandal. That's right.
He's
yeah.
back already.
He's good, isn't he? A man's a worker.
Mania payday.
Yeah.
Ball jangly. Clackety clack.
Clackety clack.
Gonzalez looks like such a fucking loser. Like, I just think, like, technically on paper, aren't you the same as Andre the Giant? Yeah, you've got the, I don't know, without the booking and without the presence, and there's, like, no magnificence here. It's like, this guy sucks. Like, really, really bad. Yeah, as the crowd chants for Hogan, or is it the chant for Hogan, someone presses play on the Hogan chant, Fluffy-headed Calloway comes out to get his heat back. Andy Leonard asks, why does Taker recover off-camera? It's like he went backstage and Vince says, get the fuck back out there and fix this.
Actually, like, the whole point of his gimmick is the zombie Mike Myers spot, you know what I mean? So, yeah, if you do it backstage, it defeats the purpose of it.
So Taker works and eventually knocks the Giant down, getting a big pop for it. Why didn't he do that during the match? Rent-a-cop shoe Gonzalez to the back, and definitely making overtures for a return match. See you at SummerSlam.
And what happened? I'd imagine that's the last pay-per-view appearance for Giant Gonzalez. Yeah.
Does he wear his onesie in that?
I think he's got his furry. I'm sure he has his furry things.
He adds a bit. He just doesn't shave, is it?
Yeah.
Does he look like a battered sausage?
If it was dropped on the ground in a Greek restaurant. What do you think of the match, guys?
Bollocks.
Yeah, probably Taker's worst match ever.
The build, the match, the finish, the moves, the story, the booking. It's all bollocks.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
It's time for our It's Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji versus Bret the Hitman Hart for Bret's WWF Championship title. Now, Bret won the WWF title on a house show from Ric Flair in October 92 and had been built up as a fighting champion, defending his belt regularly and out-wrestling his opponents to prove himself as a worthy champion and top babyface. His next opponent was an unstoppable monster, not Giant Gonzalez, who outweighed him by over 250 pounds. In from the AWA, Rodney Anoa'i of the famous Anoa'i Samoan wrestling clan, comprising of the Anoa'i and Maivia family, which includes The Rock, Rock's dad, the Wild Samoans, Afa and Sika, head shrinkers Samu and Rikishi Fatu, Rosie from 3 Minute Warning and Shit, Umaga, Manu, the Usos, and the Shield's Roman Reigns. It's quite impressive. Yokozuna made his WWF debut as a Japanese sumo wrestler on Halloween night 1992, squashing Virgil at the Survivor Series.
I've never seen you take such a shellacking before.
There's a great promo afterwards where Virgil warns Bret to watch out for him because...
This Yokozuna, whatever Fuji bought from the Far East, this man is a menace. He's dangerous, man.
He eliminated Randy Savage last to win the Royal Rumble and was given a WWF Championship match at WrestleMania 9.
And, you know, Bret being this fighting champion, who was he actually beating?
The Repo Man, Damien Demento, Bastion Booger, maybe Rick Martel, yeah. Tito.
So, all the stars, basically.
Yeah. Doink, bro!
Doink, bro! That's the problem.
Papa Shango.
Shango Tango.
Yeah, so roll out the jobbers.
Yeah. Like, and that's for pretty much the entirety of Bret's kind of new generation world title run. It's been jobber after jobber, you know. DDS Isaac Yankum and, you know, your man Jean-Pierre Lafitte or whatever his name was. And Jerry Lawler. Just fucking, who gives a shit? He had nobody to fucking beat.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, you... Alright, when the steroid scandal hit and the sex scandal, all of the main eventers and quite a few mid-card as well left. And if you take away those, you know, you don't suddenly everyone's bumped up a notch. No, you're just
everyone
having...
has dropped down.
Everyone's a mid-carder, everyone's an opening card. There is no main event and that takes years to build. So, yeah, he's beaten nobody. It would be nice if a major star from the Hulkamania era came back, maybe one or two pay-per-views, and put over the leader of the new generation. Pass the torch.
Let's see. You know? Let's see about
backstage, Minas Genus recounts the main event feud, and more specifically, the arrival and dominance of Yokozuna. Zuna, or more fittingly for the pay-per-view, in the AWA he was known as Kokina Maximus, literally and figuratively squashed Jim Duggan after a successful try-knock-me-down challenge. And then he flattened Bret Hart at their WWF Championship contract signing.
His bonsai drop to Bret Hart was really bad looking. He's out there.
Bret's on the ground. How can he avoid a bump?
No. Yokozuna does it. And, you know, he jumps in and he kind of grabs onto the ropes and goes, yeah, and just like gently safe. Settles down on him.
Safe.
Just as well. He's a big man.
Yeah. Backstage, who better to tell us about Bret's reign than Cunt Hogan? He looks really rough with his bloodshot eye and dirty shiner. Gene looks surprised. It's odd. Why are you around? You've already wrestled. He says Bret's a brother. Bret's a Hulkamaniac. And to watch out for Fuji and Zuna.
You know, Bret Hart, a warning to the wise, brother. You're a brother. You're a Hulkamaniac.
How condescending is it to call Bret a Hulkamaniac? Oh, little God. Bret, look at him there, you know.
Rubbing his head.
Yeah.
Twisting his hair. You and Beaver run along.
I want you to watch this Yokozuna and Mr. Fuji like a cat, brother.
What's he mean, like, up against the telly with his paws on it?
He ponders the greatness of Hulkamania and issues a challenge to the winner of the match.
Right now, Bret Hart, I'm issuing a challenge to either you or the Jap, brother.
Like, we'd be about saying that.
We wouldn't say that.
Not on microphone. Yeah.
Kokina Maximus enters with Fuji, with geisha girls in the ring. So, why the evil Japanese gimmick? You can't exploit the Gulf War anymore. Like, what other wars can we exploit for cheap heat? It's like, we have no Korean wrestlers, you know? You can't do the Russians again. You just did them.
Yeah.
So it's like maybe Gorilla Monsoon walk by. Pearl Harbor!
Very good.
It was an awesome roadie run. And it goes to Bret Hart's entrance. Not a huge ovation. I wasn't impressed by the noise.
No, God, no. Bret Hart was not over as champion.
Did anyone get a huge ovation?
Hogan.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe, like, with no ovations, maybe he could be a victim of open-air crowds, you know? And, like, WWF never mic'd the crowd properly to compensate for that. Even, like, this year at Mania, it's like...
I don't think
so. A muted crowd, you know?
I think it was literally just, he's not over and this match is not over.
Cut to a correctly spelled R-E-S-P-E-C-T sign in the crowd.
That's right, warrior.
WWF ran a music video about respecting Bret Hart to build up the match. Why in 93? It's like not cool.
And how many,
you know,
songs has this guy gotten to try and put him over as well, by the way? Do you remember he had that like Light the Fire song? Do you remember that?
That was great.
What's the Light the Fire song? You start.
It's either that or that love ballad that he's saying. Cause things you're gonna say will break her heart and make her cry. There's never been a right time to say goodbye. To say goodbye. Yes, the camera barely takes notice of Zuna's pre-match rituals of receiving flowers and cleansing the ring with his salt, aka baby powder. But the camera takes keen notice right up Yoko's hall. Right up. Yeah, I take back what I said about Kevin Dunn earlier. And there was a nice sign in the crowd. You see it? Bret can beat Japan.
The entire country. He's technical, isn't he? Oh yeah, sorry. I have a bar for Bret Hart as well, if you want
to. Steve! What bar is Bret Hart?
Alright, I'm embarrassed that it's taken me this long to cop this. He's obviously a pink snack bar.
Done.
Yeah.
30 episodes to cop this.
Bret's plan is to constantly work to get the Samoan off his feet. Hitman kicks off with a Prince Devitt-like two-footed dropkick. And then, bad idea, going for a waistlock. Good idea, pulling his leg while outside and Yoko takes a bump. The ref releases Yoko...
Bad idea, the rest of the booking for the next 2 minutes where Yoko is lying on his back like a fucking turtle who can't unhook his leg. Like, aren't the Japanese supposed to be like incredibly intelligent and savvy? And this...
Well, he is. He's taking a break. Having a rest.
But Bret Hart is jumping onto the ropes and he jumps onto him 3 times. And Yoko's just like, no. He doesn't even... All he has to do is just, like, turn his leg 90 degrees either right or left and his foot will be out. Nah.
This is less energy this way.
I love Lionel Michelle.
The ref releases Zuna's foot by almost tying it in the ropes. Yoko slows it down and gets equipped with the Andre rope lean. Then the Ionian nerve grip that goes magna. It's super effective. Bret responds with a bullet. No, it's not. It's a jump on his back and fall forward.
Yeah, I think Yokozuna was so exhausted at this point that he couldn't stay on his feet. So he fell on his belly like a turtle.
Then repeats it properly with a perfect second rope bulldog. Heenan commends Yoko for not breathing heavy as we cut to a shot of Yoko breathing heavy. But what, you shouldn't be commending him for 5 minutes.
Oh, which he spent about 3 on a shell.
Bret has been building that this match makes total sense and really got the crowd into it. So there was more get Yoko off his feet by capitalising on missed hoe trains and multiple clotheslines, and is successful, and the crowd popped for it. Yeah, so the crowd weren't into it, and thanks to Hart's booking and laying out the match, yeah, they're invested now.
Mm.
It's very impressive. Hart is just about able to apply the sharpshooter as, what? It's already time for the closing sequence.
The job he did on the sharpshooter is pretty decent.
Yeah, yeah. Those legs must weigh the guts of, like, 250 pounds. That's... He's
125 turtles.
Or three giant turtles.
So it's time for the finish, and it also takes Fuji by surprise. He's still had to fumble around and find and open his bag of baby powder.
By the way, like, Brett was looking at Fuji, like, Fuji is fishing around in his pants or whatever.
Come on, Cody.
And, yeah, and he's looking at him, like, close your eyes real tight, you know? Whatever he's throwing, you're fine. He knows what he does with the salt. He's seen the fucking salt.
Fuji throws salt into Hart's eyes, and that's enough to knock him out, apparently. And Yoko goes for the cover and gets the three. Holy shit. 8:53. Like, I thought the match itself was great and it was going 90, but it was far too short. And it was like the match was in fast forward. And I was like, I wonder if OOC will like this, because there's no fucking about in this match.
I really did like it. I thought I didn't like the finish, and it could have done with an extra few minutes. But yeah.
Brett planned out the match,
yeah.
And Yoko went home to the finishing sequence 5 minutes far too early.
No way.
And that's why Fuji was taken by surprise. Like, well, it's not in here for another 5 minutes. Oh, fuck, and get my baby powder out. Brett was really upset with him and told Yoko that those 5 minutes are gone forever and I'm not going to use them at a later date.
I'm sure Yoko wouldn't want an extra 5 minutes.
Can we just do those 5 minutes?
It's no skin off my shell. Lightning quick, Hogan gets in the ring, attending to his friend, Brett. His friend since earlier today. There wasn't any storyline before tonight. Fuji spits out some English, challenging Hogan right now for Yoko's WWF Championship. What? Why, Fuji? Managing Yoko is the best business decision you've ever made. And you challenge Cunt Hogan after your boy got blown up beating Brett.
Right. Hogan is helping Brett, and Brett's all like, my ass. And, you know, Hogan's like, you okay, brother? And then Brett goes, it's grand. Go for it. I'd be like, no, help me to the fucking back. Yeah. We're mates, yeah. Aren't we, Hulk?
He should have just held on to his leg. Hogan's struggling.
You tried to drag him along.
Brendan can't be scooting on his arms. Seeing blind man Brett motioning to accept Yoko's challenge. Or maybe that there was an eyewash right behind Hogan. Hogan dodges the salt attack, hits the big leg, and disposing of the foreigner in just 22 seconds, the plucky 39-year-old wins his championship for the fifth time. Another WrestleMania ends with Hogan as champion, on top the new generation with the old fucking guard. You know, he won this title before Brett was in the back.
Did he?
He was still on the entrance ramp.
No fucking way.
22 seconds and he's selling.
Oh my goodness.
By the way, who commissioned this match?
Hogan.
Oh.
In his promo where he's talking about Bret Hart, he says, I want to challenge the winner of the world title match.
Not tonight, like.
He doesn't say tonight. He doesn't say anything.
And is he a commissioner? And does he have the proper paperwork?
He needs Teddy Long to make a tag match instead. Like, holla.
And then Fuji quite clearly was throwing salt at Hogan. Referee was looking at it. Disqualification. Yoko keeps the belt. In no way does Hogan winning the belt here work. Not only that, but do you remember Hogan beat The Undertaker by throwing ashes in his eyes? The ref didn't see that. Hogan won the belt. And they actually took the belt off Hogan.
Yeah.
They're just letting this happen.
Yep.
Hogan caused a media shitstorm on Arsenio Hall, left WWF high and dry in 92 when the steroid heat was on, and when they tried to rebuild a new star, you were turned not to put him over, but to fuck him out of his title and the WrestleMania main event spotlight, a match that you're not even in. Hot dog and grandstand, you selfish prick. 2 minute pop, you get your surprise, and then, like, the rolling, seeping dread of just what's happened here. Like, I know you're fine and, like, your return got 410,000 buys. You're winning the WWF title got zero buys because it wasn't a featured match. So there's no good kayfabe or business reason to do this. You've actually fucked people out of Hogan going for a title match.
Build that up for months. Yeah. Yoko and Hogan. Why not?
Yeah.
For
fuck's sake. To be clear, Vince McMahon taking one up the ass is as much to blame for this. Like, he booked this. He okayed this. He booked his supposed top babyface and future of the company as an idiot. And his heel champion's a fucking jobber. And to fuck over your main eventers. They're both insignificant compared to the mighty Hulk Hogan, who demolishes any good work they've tried to do, and then leaves again.
Brother.
Yeah, so you finished the pay-per-view, nobody's talking about Bret Hart. No, does anyone even remember he was champion? Because we're so far beyond Bret as champion. It's like, it's the match started off where Bret gets the roadie run, he's the centre of business. Nope. Fucking Hulk Hogan. What is there to say about Hulk Hogan? It's the worst thing he's done on screen.
Oh yeah, on screen, definitely, yeah.
Can you think of what he's done worse off screen?
Like, I know there's loads he did in WCW, but jeez, just drop the belt. It's not real.
All right, let's just, we'll continue giving out in the aftermath.
Fans, what a night has been for all of us here in Las Vegas, for Bobby Heenan and Randy Savage, Gino Corleone, and everyone, including Gorilla Monsoon. I'm Jim Ross, saying thanks for being with us, and so long, everybody, from Las Vegas.
Let me get this straight now.
Alright, so let's break down this Hogan bullshit. Okay, the original plan before Hogan came back was Bret beats Yoko and then moves on to feud with Luger. And they brought it up with Luger KOing him the night beforehand. So the original plan with Hogan was him to keep him away from the title. So it would be like, oh, Hogan, he can beat Warrior at Mania 9. But Warrior's gone, so here's the plan now with Hogan. Bret loses to Yoko. Hogan beats Yoko at King of the Ring. And then they'd set up a big, massive Bret versus Hogan at SummerSlam. Bret wins, pass the torch. And that's what they're going to do. You know, it's pretty cool. Plan thanks to Hogan. Bret loses to Yoko. Hogan destroys Yoko. He's supposed to give it to Bret at King of the Ring, but he refuses and drops it back to Yoko instead. Thus never wrestling and putting over WWF's top babyface and future of the company. When Vince booked, all right, Hogan's going to lose to Yoko at King of the Ring because he's out of here. Bret was really annoyed and wanted to wrestle Hogan and get his belt back. But he said, all right, I don't want to deny Yoko another run. So I'll just give out afterwards. And so after the match, he goes straight to Hogan, say, what the fuck was that? And Hogan was like, you're not in my league. And you know what else? Go fuck yourself. That's it. End scene.
Lovely fella.
Yeah, so Vince appeasing Hogan, crawling back to him. It was a short-term decision, a long-term disaster. It didn't boost house shows or TV ratings. He was champ for 3 months, but he made about 5 appearances on TV. Never defended his title, you know. He wanted the belt over the summer so he could be front and centre when his film Mr. Nanny came out to ensure the movie wouldn't bomb. And bitch Vince catered to Hogan's ego. It is a shame, under a month later, Hogan would be in New Japan as WWF champion, calling his WWF championship a toy.
5 times World Wrestling Federation champion. This belt is just a toy. It's like a trinket on a Christmas tree, like an ornament. The belt that I want is the one that the great Muta has, the IWGP belt.
What a cunt. What an absolute arsehole.
Like, you can't even say anything else about it. It's like, if anybody listens to that and doesn't immediately think, you cunt, you are a horrible man, it's like, what are you doing listening to this show? Mm. You know what I mean? Like, what an self-centered shitebag who, despite what he claims, doesn't give a flying fuck about the business or the WWF. Obviously, he only cares about himself and his bank account. That's it.
And it's like, you can't even read...
talentless daughter.
Great guy. The pay-per-view in general, oddly enough, none of the wrestlers knew the finish of their matches, apart from the WWF Championship, until earlier that day. So that might account for the show being pretty wobbly. The double change was set in stone earlier, though, and Hogan had never any intention of wrestling Bret. Macho not wrestling is a conundrum. Vince wanted to focus on younger, new talent, and thought of Savage as too old to draw and headline, despite stealing the show at the last two Manias.
But the older Hogan is Grant to be your champion.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Vince, yeah.
Macho offered to put Shawn and Bret over in early 93, but Vince says, nah. That's just Vince.
What can you say? Yeah.
Maybe he's the Hulkamaniac. But
yeah.
Him and Beaver. Question, what did you think of Macho's commentating?
Yeah, terrible. Really, really terrible. And I never thought he would make a good commentator. He's not that kind of, you know, he's kind of a bit obscure and says random things. And, you know, he's not going to be overly coherent at any point. Pretty shit, I have to say.
Totally agree. He's great if you're going through the show looking for stupid things that he says. Then he's fantastic. But if you're watching a show, he's so annoying, he takes away from the quality of the show.
I think he's talking like he thinks commentators talk, rather than if he was a commentator, because he'd just keep talking, and he'd engage Bobby Heenan, and I thought he tried to take over the conversation without having anything to say, and it just left JR doing nothing. So it really hurt his commentary. By the end of it, JR, greatest commentator of all time, I don't remember anything that he said.
Mm.
All I can remember is, do the thing, crush the bra.
That'll loosen your teeth.
Crush is not even a dentist.
Crush trying to shake it loose.
To be a dentist, you have to have an education.
Heenan, you're a figment of your own imagination.
We want to welcome our radio audience.
Look at this for a stare down or a stare up. This match is slowed down and sped up at the same time.
So overall, is this the worst Mania of all time?
No.
Nope. Not even close.
I agree. It is
excellent. Because, like, for me, it's WrestleMania 4 by a fucking mile.
It's an hour longer than WrestleMania 2,
no,
which is also bad.
No contest 2.
I mean, like, this is far better than WrestleMania 1, for example.
Yeah.
Better than WrestleMania 2. It's a bit, it's similar enough to 7, similar quality to 7. You know, it's a perfectly acceptable wrestling pay-per-view, you know.
If it didn't have the stupid Roman theme, I don't think people would think of it as the worst Mania ever.
Yeah. Or the
Hogan.
That was slightly more, maybe. Yeah. A quick recap here. Two matches ended with a decisive finisher, then pin, which is Steiner's botched Frankensteiner and cunt Hogan. Three DQs, two of which were title matches, Tatanka, Money Inc., Taker. And then quick or cheap wins for Luger, Razor, and Yoko. And I love Doink storyline making finish. So if you look at this ream of DQs and bullshit finishes, it sounds like a terrible show. It was actually quite an easy watch.
Yeah,
I was saying on paper it's horrendous because but maybe it's because of the new faces or the massive swell of negativity and built up this atrocious bullshit main event. But I found the pay per view quite easy to watch, because I thought maybe I'll do an hour here, give it a bit of a rest, and I watched the first 2 hours. I was like, oh, 2 hours.
The exact same thing happened to me. Not to say that this show is good or anything, because, you know, I don't want people to be like, oh my God, they're saying it's not the worst Mania ever. Fuck you. It's maybe the third worst Mania ever, you know, but it's not the worst.
And we haven't seen 11 yet.
And we're not going to.
So let's head to the wrestling is.
I love the way they just stop being words anymore. It's just have to make a sound.
segment.
Awesome!
I said, are you ready for the Survivor Series?
One. Who will survive?
Tatanka will be successful.
Hey, ever since I was a little bitty boy, I wanted to do one thing and one thing only, and that's to be a law enforcement officer. Treat other people like you'd want to be treated. Try to walk the straight and narrow, because that's the only way you're going to survive in this life.
Who will survive?
Execution is on top. There's a new gun in town.
I made a vow to become a law enforcement officer. See these handcuffs right here? They're an instrument of justice. The big boss man is law, order, and justice of the World Wrestling Federation.
Who will survive?
Singing that song on WrestleMania,
then. Yeah, an awesome 90s video. Nicely, Kevin Dunn found a kaleidoscope. That'll do it for this week, folks. Episode 30 is in the books. Good stuff, lads.
Yep.
We're now in uncharted waters as our chronologically critiquing days of... Never mind.
Critiquing.
We're now in uncharted waters as we... Chronologically we're now in uncharted water. We're now in we're now in uncharted waters as we chronologically critique wrestling storylines. Next up is something we've wanted to do for quite some time. Episode 31 will be
Ready to Rumble.
Boom, David Arquette for the CW Ready to Rumble, which will be followed by episode 32. Which will be David Arquette winning the WCW title, and episode 33 WCW Slammery 2000 featuring the triple cage match featuring your boy Jeff Jarrett your boy, DDP, and my boy, David Arquette.
Awesome.
So you guys can look forward to that. So it's a goodbye from Mr. Rosie.
V1.
Take a boo.
Take a boo, son.
Take a boo, son.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember, a winner is you.